All right, so before we get started, I just wanted to say one thing, which is...
Wow.
Just messing with us. We got to make sure that that's actually on the tape. All right. Hey, everyone, Kai Rizdal. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Today is Thursday, the 23rd of March. Making today make sense. Oh, I stole your line. I'm sorry. Here I am thinking I'm being like
that's
a full-service
host. That's okay. Lord. I thought that you were doing your PM line since, you know, you're so used to doing the date at the top. It is Thursday, and I'm Kimberly Adams. Thank you for joining us. And today we are going to do the basic stuff. We're going to unpack some news of the day and then get smiley by the end. And let us get to it. Kai, why don't you go first?
So there was a hearing today up on Capitol Hill with the CEO of TikTok, which is, as we have talked about on this podcast, in the crosshairs for a whole lot of reasons. The reason I bring that up is not to point out that as a news item, because it has been everywhere, rightly so, because it's a big deal, but to point out that during that hearing, the Treasury Department, specifically the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, which is abbreviated or summarized or acronymized as CFIUS, put out a statement, unbidden, unprompted, un-anything. It just, oh, by the way, we're going to put out this statement that says, we take data privacy very seriously. We don't mess around with this, and we will take all appropriate actions necessary to ensure data privacy in this economy. Now, CFIUS is the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, as I said, which reviews all the big would-be deals and mergers and investments and everything in the United States. It's very far-reaching, a little bit secretive. And it's a very big deal for this committee in the middle of this hearing to have said, oh, yeah, nothing to see here, but we're keeping an eye on privacy. It was really interesting, I thought.
Watching that hearing and listening to the members of, you know, the senators talk and it was the Senate, wasn't it? Yes.
I was just going to say it was the House.
It was the House. It was the House today. Yes, God. All those rooms look the same. Watching that hearing and just in general, watching how the federal government is dealing with TikTok, you have to wonder what they have that they're not sharing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they are so adamant that this is a problem. And, you know, as our guest the other Tuesday said, you know, we don't have any evidence that TikTok is sharing information. We don't have any evidence. But everyone across the government seems very, very sure. And I was watching a bit of the hearing today, and one of the Republicans, after yelling at the CEO of TikTok, was like, you know, I hope you're enjoying your time at the most bipartisan committee in Congress, or most bipartisan hearing in Congress.
That's pretty good.
And it's fun. Like, yeah, there's got to be something going down at the private briefings that has everyone very, very concerned.
Totally agree. I was flipping through the channels on the TV in my office today, and I came across Mark Warner, the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee on Fox News, and the snippet that I heard was him saying, yes, we want to declassify as much as we can so everybody can understand what's going on. So more to come. More to come.
It's basically like, if you knew what we knew, you would not want TikTok on your phone either.
Totally. Yeah.
One of the House members, I think it was Crenshaw, said today that, you know, in response to, you know, all the kids being like, you're just trying to ruin our fun. And he's like, I know it seems like we're just trying to come after your favorite app, but you may not care about your privacy now, but you might care about it later.
For sure.
Like, it doesn't matter until you're applying for a job and something comes up. Anyway. I listened with great interest to your interview today about the chatbots on the evening show. And as I was listening to it and thinking, because I was also looking earlier today at a couple of rundowns of just what ChatGPT can do well at this point and what it can't. And because I'm an epic nerd, one of my favorite spots on the internet to go is regulations.gov to look at public comments.
Oh, my Lord. I know.
It's really sad.
And you're
it's
saying
really
you
sad.
Understand that we're recording this, right? I mean, people
I
are going to hear you
I
say
know.
That.
It's okay. I know myself, and I love myself, and I'm okay with
there
who I
go.
Am.
There you go.
Anyway, regulations.gov, which is where you can go to submit public comment on regulations as they're in development or in proposal or once they've written a draft and they want to see what the public thinks about it. It's a big site for government transparency, and anybody can submit a public comment. This site already has a problem with sort of mass commenting, where someone will create like an online form, send it out to all the members of, say, an advocacy group and be like, fill out this form and we'll submit the comment for you, which ends up kind of spamming the system with a lot of comments that look the same on big pieces of regulation that are moving through. That's already an issue. And I was like, man, what is ChatGPT going to do to regulations and the regulatory process and public comments? Because if I'm in, you know, lobbying group or an advocacy group, it's going to be real tempting to just tell ChatGPT, hey, submit 5,000 comments telling different stories about how such and such affected me, and that could shape our laws. And I was like, oh, no, oh, no. So some people have already started looking at this. There's a researcher at George Washington University who had a paper out or commentary out in January with the title, Will ChatGPT Break Notice and Comment for Regulations? So people are already thinking about this. I have to imagine that the federal government is thinking about this and worrying about it. So it will be very fascinating to see how they figure out a way to respond to this.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, that's one of them. The other one was just something that kind of made me chuckle a little bit. So we reported at great length on SPACs at Marketplace over the last couple of years, which are special – oh, God, what did that even stand for? Special – help me, Kai.
Oh, Special Purpose Acquisition Corporation or Company. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, so it was basically this thing where you'd create a shell company and, you know, you could list it on the stock market and, you know, put whatever you wanted into it. It was a way to very quickly bring private companies to the public market without as much oversight, right? And they were very popular for a bit until they weren't anymore for a variety of reasons. However, one of them kind of fell apart at the last minute. And it was called Colonnade Acquisition Corp. And it was supposed to be, you know, this umbrella for whatever companies it was going to buy up and list on the stock exchange. Anyway, it didn't work. They never acquired anything. And so slowly but surely, this company has fallen apart. And they have decided to not pay their lawyers.
Wow.
Because they're arguing that since they never acquired anything and didn't have any mergers or acquisitions, that they shouldn't have to pay their years of legal fees, even though they had this big IPO where they raised like $300 million and they've been winding things down. And, you know, what happens when you don't pay lawyers is that they sue you. And usually have a lot of documents. So now this law firm is suing the company and said that they are owed fees in upwards of $8 million. I just thought it was such a perfect bow tie on the end of the SPAC trend of, you know, now they're not paying their legal fees because they just don't feel like it. Wow.
Oh, man. That's great.
Anyway. Yeah.
It is a perfect It is a perfect bow on the end of the SPAC mania of a year ago. Totally. All right. I'll go first just because I found this article in the Washington Post today that brought me back a sense of nostalgia like I can't even tell you. And clearly it worked for one Kimberly Adams as well. Because when I sat down in the shed today and put my headphones on, what did I hear but Kimberly Adams singing the Blockbuster
jingle?
Wow,
what a difference. Blockbuster video.
Amazing. Amazing. So the Post has an article today, the headline of which is The Internet Rediscovered Blockbuster's Website, Press Play on Nostalgia. We should say that there is no indication that Blockbuster is coming back to life. It is down to 9,000, down from rather 9,000 stores to one in Bend, Oregon. But it does have a website, blockbuster.com. It is alive, and it says we are working on rewinding your movie. Now, apparently, a lot of people think that means that Blockbuster is coming back, and the sense of nostalgia really is kind of real, because I remember, well, number one, when I was growing up, but number two, when I had my kids and they were little and I was desperate for something to do with them on a Friday night, we would go to Blockbuster and wander up and down the aisles for a good, you know, half hour, 40 minutes while they picked a movie or two apiece. And it was amazing. And it was, you know, Netflix before Netflix was this thing that just showed up in your house. It was cool. It was cool. Anyway, I love that little article.
That was fun. That was fun. And clearly it's like the nostalgia things are just enjoyable sometimes.
Yeah, totally.
Depending on.
Totally.
Anyway, mine is the same it was last year, which is peak bloom, peak bloom, peak bloom. Cherry blossoms are in peak bloom here in D.C., which is wonderful for the visuals. It is terrible for my allergies, but I have definitely enjoyed looking at the cherry blossoms. They look beautiful. There's a live stream online if you want to see them. And that is all. That is what made me smile. Flowers.
Flowers. They're supposed to be beautiful. But if you're a native Washingtonian, stay away because it's pandemonium. That's all I'm saying.
You know, weekdays, no? If you're a native Washingtonian.
Yeah.
Are you know, not so bad, but
fair enough.
This fair weekend, enough. It's going to be a nightmare. Absolute nightmare.
Absolute nightmare. All right. And on that, we go out. We're done. Back tomorrow for Economics on Tap, 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific. We'll do some drinks, news, and a round of half full, half empty.
Yes. And in the meantime, we are taking voicemails at 508 UV Smart and voice memos at Mark. Is it
I can explain what those are now if people are curious. No, it's Make
Isn't
Me Smart.
It Make Me Smart, yeah. Yes. At makemesmart@marketplace.org. Anyway, that's
Anywho,
what we're saying.
Make those Me Smart, which is the podcast you are listening to, is produced by Courtney Bergseeker. Today's episode was engineered by Jay Siebold. Our intern is Antonio Barreras.
Ellen Rolfes writes our newsletter. Marissa Cabrera is our acting senior producer. Bridget Bodner is the director of podcasts. And Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital.
Boom.
Boom.